it always blows my mind, the concept of guilty pleasures in music. Guilty to who? Who the fuck is, like, what? What is that even? I don't even know what that means. I do not even know what it means. A song that's a guilty pleasure. Who am I trying to impress?
We've been through this before. I don't believe in guilty pleasures. There's no such thing as liking something ironically. You can perform liking something and not really. But if you like something, you like it. Stop.
I think you can have a guilty pleasure if you're like, oh, I like the cruelty heavy tuna. Like, that's a thing. You can, that can be a guilty pleasure.
Okay.
For
okay.
Like, oh, this is the tuna that has a little bit of dolphin in it.
Yeah.
And I think it tastes better. That's a guilty pleasure.
Well, maybe you generally like dolphin. But yeah, that is a good point. It, like, in terms of separating the art from the artist, separating the dolphin-safe tuna from the non-dolphin-safe tuna, then that point emerges as valid.
Yeah. That's not... Nobody's going to save this. Like, it's like... You know what? You can have, like, this is on me. It's on me that I even expose myself to this kind of thing. But, like, it's dumb guy shit. It's not even dumb guy shit in the fun way. Dumb guy shit in the fun way is I accidentally set my pants on fire. Like, that's great. I like that kind of dumb guy shit in my life. The kind of dumb guy shit where somebody says, I can't believe you think that, and then... and then theatrically attempts to disagree with it for the sake of propping up this, like, Weekend at Bernie's style argument, right?
Well,
like,
I think if you're going to do this, you have to represent, I have never eaten something truly sad. Like, I don't have any standing to get high and mighty about other people's food preferences because I have stood in front of the fridge, put a piece of turkey in my hand, put a piece of cheese on that, rolled it up, and eaten it all without using a napkin, a plate, a count, anything. And because I have done that, I don't get to tell people what goes in chili or not.
Yeah,
I have eaten like a sad animal. And
all
therefore,
have fallen short.
Right. And unless you can look somebody in the eye and say, no, I've never made sad fridge rollatini.
Or been poor.
Yeah, that too.
Or grown up poor.
Yeah.
Like the
oh my god, sad fridge rollatini is what we're naming the dish, the struggle dinner that I had a couple weeks ago.
That is the sad dish rollatini, and yeah. It is impressive.
I think the other thing along these lines is like, oh my god, how have you never seen that movie? And it's like, because
sure.
There's a fucking million movies.
There's a lot
what
of them.
What do you need to know here?
This and the only thing that used to be like this was like, if people who didn't know a commercial. When we all watched live television all the
time.
When
we all watched the same show every
night.
That
could be truly shocking.
My favorite on the movie thing, by the way, is this. So he's like, how could you have not seen that? And there's two answers, and one's charitable and one's not. One is, I don't know, man, I got kids. Like, when you get kids, you just sign off on an entire raft of content that other people are just pouring wholesale into their brains. And then the second is not so charitable, which is, I have taste. That's another thing.
The third one.
What's the third one?
Not a movie guy.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep.
I'm not really.
This is me with shows. Yep. This is me with shows.
This is me with music. I'm just like, I'm glad everybody loves music.
Not a songs guy.
I like, it's more that
God,
like.
Lives in Nashville.
If I could find a specific point
Brooklyn
in time.
Brooklyn to Nashville.
It's probably like 2004 where I was just like, oh, I've had all the music I need from now on.
Cutting you off here. So like you heard Nelly and you're like, we're not going to top this.
You might have been right.
Yeah. No, that's totally
valid. I mean,
it's
valid. It's a valid argument.
Yep,
it's fair.
You said Ludacris back for the first time and last, baby.
Last time indeed.
Yeah, I have a very full life.
Okay, speaking of movies.
Oh, good.
I'm sorry. If it's too late to talk about this, it's too late to talk about this.
Are we doing the show? Is this a show now?
No one ever really knows.
Okay.
Yeah,
no. Why don't we do a welcome and then do this?
All right.
No, I do want to do this, to be clear.
Hey, folks.
Speaking of disaster.
Since
no.
Since you're here anyway, why don't we gather around the kitchen table?
Blast a welcome, Adam, boy.
Fire. Fire now, welcome, boy.
Fire, welcome.
Dance, welcome, monkey.
Welcome, gorilla. Put on your dancing shoes.
Clap your hands or Spencer's going to die. Clap your hands if you believe in welcome.
Vomit up that welcome already.
Like an owl pellet.
Welcome, gorilla is more than welcome.
Do it, welcome, gorilla.
Thank you.
to the Shutdown Fullcast.
New goal listening. For one of us is to get Spencer to break during the welcome. I don't know if it's ever happened.
Ooh, yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah, like, new goal.
I interrupted him, but...
He goes so business mode when it's time for the welcome.
Yeah, yeah. Good job, welcome.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you. It's my one contribution to this podcast. Now I'm going to sit over here, eat some leaves, and drag some tourists around the mountains of Rwanda. That's what I do. There was a time, by the way, in Marvel Comics where they just kept putting... DC and Marvel realized that if they put a gorilla on the cover, they would get really great sales. So they just kept finding new and more elaborate ways to build gorillas into it. And I love that. I wish streaming television worked like that.
Comic book gorillas. I'm going to see if there's a Wikipedia page on this.
Gorilla Grodd.
List DC? Of fictional primates in comics. Thank you, Wikipedia. You have fucking crushed it once again. Ooh. Oh, my God.
It's so long. People couldn't get enough gorilla. They just craved gorilla. And that is where I want to start, because what better place to start than welcoming the people in with what they want, which is gorillas. Actually, that's not where we wanted to start.
In a manner of speaking, but... Mm-hmm. Mm.
Lex Lemur? That was one?
Wow. Wow. I was trying to think of the best variant crossover type,
Lex
right?
Lex Lemur's really
Iron,
good.
Iron Gorilla or, Venom Gorilla or whatever, but that's it. The best one has already been done.
There is also one on here called Sky Ape, described as a millionaire gorilla with a jetpack.
God damn.
Oh, wow.
That's Iron Gorilla.
That's like Silverback. That's just Silverback Bruce Wayne.
Sky Ape.
Or Silverback Gorilla Tony Stark.
Sky Ape. This is a black and white comic book series from the early 2000s.
So,
titles included Sky Ape, Sky Ape : Waiting for Crime, Sky Ape : All the Heroes, and Sky Ape : King of Girls.
Was this written by a gorilla?
I don't know.
Is this the product of a million monkeys and a million typewriters?
Maybe so. Maybe so.
If it is, it's the one that made them all stop typing and applaud.
We've done it, boys.
We've done it.
New Morgan Wallen just dropped, boys.
There are so many comics.
Sorry.
We've done it. We are the king of girls.
I don't know who that is because I stopped listening to music.
I really only know who it is because of Jason.
I tell you, every origin story.
I only know of that because of the Shutdown Fullcast.
Great. We've become a knowledge Ouroboros.
Who was the original Gene Truck shorts cutie?
Those fucking punks they put on College Game Day. I don't know any of their names.
Okay.
It's like 18 of them and they're all the same guy.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
They're all the same guy. We gotta figure out some way to use that. Hmm. We could kill a lot of them before anybody knows.
True. Every one of these origin stories, by the way, is something I would love to do. Mm. All right? Gorilla Boss from the Batman universe. Mm-hmm. And remember, if you haven't explored all of those Batman villains, Condiment King is a real one. As the Lego
Calendar
Batman movie.
Man.
Yeah.
Of course.
Gorilla Boss was originally a mobster by the name of George Dyke, but he was set to be executed. But you know what? It's important to have a plan in life. And his... was to have his brain removed from his body by his henchmen, and it ends up transplanted into the body of a towering gorilla.
Smart.
That's perfect. I'd love for somebody to do that with me after I die. It'd be awesome. Put my brain in a giant gorilla body. And be like, whoa, you couldn't type. And I'm like, couldn't go on the internet. I'm free.
Why after? I'm free. Why wait?
Yeah, what? Let's go. If you are a disgraced surgeon with very low ethics and very high technical proficiency in neurosurgery and cross-species work, at EDSBS, DM me on the failing website Twitter. We can make some magical stuff happen.
That's not even the most dangerous neurosurgery that Twitter's involved with at this
That's
point.
True. See? This is an easy one. By the way, Gorilla
God.
Man.
You really will become Welcome Monkey at the end of this.
I will become Welcome Gorilla, sir. Not a monkey. Monkeys are macaques, tiny, fragile things.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Any
yeah,
macaques
no,
listening
I'm talking
to this,
shit.
I didn't say that.
I'm talking macaque Twitter. Get at me.
Oh,
I don't
my
care.
God.
Gorillas. Gorillas strong, macaque weak. See?
Wow.
I'm already
wow. All right.
spitting
wow.
the party line.
Wow. Ooh.
Beating my chest, as it were.
Ooh. You would do so much better as a gorilla than a man.
I would. I'm already halfway there.
Evolution has really robbed you of your proper place in the universe.
We went too far. This is what return means.
We had it right the first time. We took a wrong turn down the tree.
Spencer 1.0 was fine.
You don't like wearing clothes. You don't like most human foods.
Yeah. You know what gorillas don't have to eat? Cheese. They don't have to worry about that.
I bet they love
not
cheese.
Eating soup.
No. No, they're like, that's bad milk. That's soup. That's water. I drink
gorillas
that.
Just,
I don't eat that.
Gorillas just eating bananas and throwing poop at people.
That's chimpanzee behavior, sir. Again. You're disgracefully inaccurate.
I know.
Ape
I paint
knowledge.
With a broad simian brush. I apologize.
I know. No, you're simians. Holly.
What?
Before we discuss the news of the week, and unfortunately in July we have news.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I want to apologize to all of you. To all five of you. You too, Floyd. And you made some good points today. But I feel like every week, I've had a fractious summer, fellas. And I feel like every week for the past few weeks, we've recorded the show, we've gotten it in the can, we've been pretty happy about it. And then, like, on Wednesday, as soon as the show drops, something really interesting happens. We're like, ah, shit. Why couldn't this happen 24 hours earlier? I feel like I've been complaining about this for, like, 5-6 weeks in a row. Does that sound
Is there an
right?
example that sticks out to you of something like this? I think you're right, but I'm trying to remember, like, if there's a thing that happened.
Oh, it was, like, the last time, shoot. Was there a Jimbo thing? I feel like there was a Jimbo thing.
Usually.
Yeah.
Let's just say
but there, I feel like there's been a lot of just like random little picayune internet shit that would have been great for 45 minutes on the show. And I feel like it's been happening on Wednesdays a lot this year. Of all the things we wanted to talk about that could have been teed up for us the night before we record the show, fucking Northwestern, really?
Yeah.
We got to talk about Pinkerton Pat? Really? That's not how I want to spend my July. Go away.
He did.
You know what? Fair enough.
In a sense, all really, like...
I wanted to talk about the Titanic Museum, but no.
Go ahead. I think you should.
We'll do that. We'll do that first.
You want to do that? You want to talk about the Titanic Museum?
I would love to. It postpones us talking about Northwestern football.
Okay,
so, yes.
So I've for those of you listening at home, I've teed this up by saying, hey, fellas, there's a Titanic Museum, and it's in Sevierville. And if you know what that means, then you know what we're in for. But apparently, did you hear about this? Have you heard about this?
You heard about this?
What is the deal with cruise line food at the bottom of the Marianas Trench? Do you call them occupants? Victims?
I would say occupants.
The crew, are they occupant? Are they occupying it anymore so much as painting the walls of it?
The souls lost.
Yeah, the souls lost of the little Stockton Rush capsule boat.
Yes.
Of the we can't even call it a submarine. It did get submersed.
The sailors.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they sailed.
For a minute.
Plenty of sailors go down. The newest freshmen in Davy Jones's locker room are going to be celebrated with an exhibit at the Titanic Museum. Now, you may find this offensive, and I have to tell you, you're offended in the... I want to make sure that everybody knows that they're offended in the wrong direction. First of all, I'm not sure if you're aware that there are two Titanic museums in the United States. The fact that one of them is in Branson should tell you something. Branson's a little bit more famous than the one that's closest to us, but the other one is in Sevierville, which means Pigeon Forge, which means Gatlinburg, which means... This thing could not be less solemn if they were holding it in a Margaritaville. And I wish they would. There's plenty of volcanoes under the ocean. But I'm not sure if this is a legal thing, but it feels like a distinction on the Order of Craft singles. It is referred to in its own copy as the Titanic Museum Attraction.
Huh,
like, they
weird.
Know they technically can't call it a museum. Can you have birthday parties at the Titanic Museum? Yes. Can you have vow renewals at the Titanic Museum? Yes. Are there displays? Are there specially curated displays of, I'm not making this up, a pair of shoes worn by a 10-year-old child aboard the Titanic that is like one of the only real actual props they have? If the entire crew of the museum staff has to wear full pancake makeup, it's not a museum. It's not a museum. They also recently changed. It is such a money-grabbing machine that they only recently changed a policy to allow personal photos inside the Titanic. They did not used to allow you to take phone pictures inside it because, you know, they had the photographer staged at every corner for like the $25 Polaroid. They have an imaginary, I don't know if he's supposed to be a ghost, but they have an imaginary first officer who's supposed to relate to kids called Officer Buster, who's like this little Jimmy Neutron looking kid who escorts you around the Titanic and has a thing in the summer called Officer Buster's reading list.
People don't know this was the original Notre Dame mascot.
So it's maybe more appropriate than you think for a celebration of the legacy of the submersible. But if you're getting offended because this is not solemn enough, somebody on Twitter pointed out that this is like falling into the pond, the reflecting pond at Ground Zero, and then putting your name on the memorial.
Yeah, like drowning
and,
in it.
Yeah. And I think that's about as close as close as we can come.
It's that if Ground Zero was itself like an arcade or something.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot the best part. There are over 100. This is, I'm reading from the website. Do you guys know what fairy gardens are? Half of you have daughters. You've seen fairy gardens.
Yes.
The little miniature landscapes that get put in like container gardens and stuff I don't have a fairy gardens daughter,
so
you really don't. Ryan, you've got a fairy gardens daughter. I got three nieces, so at least one of them is into fairy gardens just by odds. There are 187 little fairy gardens are placed around the ship. Are they in honor of the children? No. They are to honor the number of Irish people who perished aboard the boat.
So specific.
I've never been to the Titanic Museum. These are just things that you know when your parents live half an hour away from it. It just absorbs.
What do the other ethnicities receive?
I have not asked.
I wonder if they're represented by like gremlins or something. Like, you know, it's all distinct.
I did find one section that was about China, but it wasn't about
actually,
the dishes.
That's very Tolkien, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
There's
a murder mystery on the Titanic board game that you can buy.
Well, I think I know who did it. It's probably the iceberg.
There is a Titanic Year of the Children glowing silicone bracelet that you can find. I don't want to think about the uses of that. My favorite part, and he's deeply anti-historical, my favorite object you can buy in the gift shop is a duck in a Titanic captain's outfit, a rubber duck constitutionally unavailable to go down with the ship by virtue of being a rubber duck.
Hmm. He's built different.
Makes you think.
Yeah.
Why didn't they make the whole ship? They also have, you could buy Titanic Clydesdale plushies. Do they have Clydesdales on the Titanic?
That's why it sank.
Yeah, weighed it down a little bit.
Yeah. So damn heavy horses.
When was this institution founded? After the movie or
2010.
This is not that new. This is after I moved away.
So after Avatar.
It's after the movie, but also not close enough to the movie to be like,
right.
We must capitalize on this.
This is like the point at which kids who saw the movie have become nostalgic for the movie, right?
That's kind of brilliant.
Yeah.
And let me see if I can, just for setting's sake, because I've driven by this And it is, by the way, a replica of the Titanic that's kind of tilted to one side to look like it's sinking, attached to a building.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see what's immediately around it, just to give you a better idea of your surroundings. Okay, it is between the Hatfield and McCoy dinner show, across the street from the Buttonwillow Civil War Theater and the Elvis and Hollywood Legends Museum.
It's a good place to have a lock-in, I think.
Oh, I'd want to have, dude, I would want to have a lock-in right down the street at the Hollywood Wax Museum.
God.
You know, there was a Titanic lock-in.
Wow.
Some say it's still going.
The ocean's the original lock-in when you think about it.
I think that's right.
The ocean is never going to stick to above-the-clothes stuff.
Let me tell you about lock-ins. They don't either.
Let me tell you about a friend of mine named Poseidon. I always feel so bad for the six Chinese guys that were on that boat. Like, nobody spoke Chinese. They were just there. They were going to the Caribbean where nobody was going to speak their language anyway. They're on a boat. It sinks in the middle of it. When they get off, they're still not in a place. Like, all of those guys, those, like, six Chinese survivors.
I don't think I know about this.
Oh, yeah, no. They were
I was too focused on the Irish fairy garden.
So these guys don't get fairy gardens?
No, there is no fairy garden.
That's true. There's a section on the website that says China, and it's just devoted to the dishes that were used on the Titanic, which I think is rude.
That's fucked
yeah,
up.
That's... And like, there's a scene involving one of them in the film, I believe, but the six of them, like...
If there was a
zero information environment on the ship while it was confused and sinking, imagine it for these guys who were not speaking the hurried, panicked, sometimes drunken English being thrown around. You know, they actually are rescued, and then like they're kicked out of most of the countries where they end up anyway around 1920. So it's like, survived the Titanic. Oh, God damn it. Yikes. One of them ends up in the U.S. Some of them marry British citizens, but they're deported anyways.
What?
In 1920, like they have the rawest deal. Like, in addition to surviving a nightmarish situation and enduring lifelong trauma from that, the places that they end up, like the safe harbors, most of them are booted out. One of them becomes an American and ends up like living in Milwaukee, I believe.
Do the English receive fairy gardens?
The English, I believe, do have fairy gardens.
So, live show at the Titanic Museum.
Oh, 100%.
Okay, good. On the boat.
It's probably a bad sign that we could very easily do this.
Oh, it's a terrible sign.
This says a lot about the Titanic Museum.
Says a lot about us.
A lot about us.
Well, I mean...
Titanic Museum attraction.
That's right.
Sorry. That's what you think about. The population of the Titanic was the ultimate niche audience.
Titanic Museum product.
That's why we're going to call it.
Welcome to
Titanic Museum attraction subsidiary.
Yes.
Titanic Museum cheese food.
Drink.
Cheese food.
It's not Titanic juice. It's Titanic drink. Very different.
Let's call it
the full cast.
Hey, you know what we could call us? That you can't say about anybody else in there? Five Alive.
Oh, boy. Wow.
What? Yeah.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. We'd be associating something live with the Titanic. That's one thing.
A college football podcast, or a podcast containing 3% college football juice. Yes.
College football concentrate.
In the NFL, there is no margin for error. One mistake can change the outcome of a game. Science proves quality sleep can help boost reaction time, recovery time, and overall athletic performance. As the official sleep wellness partner of the NFL, Sleep Number's mission is to provide players with data and insights to optimize their sleep for the ultimate competitive edge. Sleep is essential for recovery, and we all have unique needs. That's why Sleep Number smart beds are perfect for couples, with individualized settings for each side. Since 2018, Sleep Number and the NFL have teamed up to bring quality sleep to elite athletes. 8 out of 10 NFL players, including 80% of Kansas City Chiefs players, trust Sleep Number for their best rest. And now, during Sleep Number's biggest sale of the year, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed, plus special financing for a limited time. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, official sleep and wellness partner of the NFL. See store for details.
Is it time? I think it's time.
All right, we can resolve as long as possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not that it's funny, it's just profoundly, profoundly dumb.
It's creepy, it's sad, it's dumb. It's really dumb. This is like the dumbest.
It's sad, it's dumb.
It's so absolutely dumb in a thousand different directions. Pat Fitzgerald, the coach at Northwestern since, God, man, first of all, he played at Northwestern. And
did he?
Yes. Oh, legendary linebacker at Northwestern. You did that. That's, wow. I swallowed that hook line.
I can't believe that works. I know.
That's amazing. Oh my God.
Fuck.
God damn.
I was just trying to keep it rolling.
Sports and culture in one podcast?
Just keep going.
So the coach there since 2006. All right. So the second longest tenured coach in the Big Ten. Fired by that institution just days after getting a 2-week suspension during a non-recruiting period in the middle of this, the dead part of the calendar, for accusations of hazing in the Northwestern football program.
Hey, Spencer, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to take that from 2 weeks to one forever?
Well, that would be the Daily Northwestern newspaper. That would be the student newspaper deciding to, you know, flesh that out a little bit. Maybe do some reporting. Maybe pursue the story a little more. And airing out multiple allegations of hazing in detail, including singling out players for some extremely bizarre, gross, invasive, sexually suggestive, one phrase is purge-like masks used for...
Suggestive, I don't think goes nearly far enough.
Yeah. I'm going to try to find the right word for this. Just some really weird, fucked up shit.
Simulated sex acts.
Yes.
The reporting is out there. Like, you know, we can summarize it.
I encourage you to go check it out, because these students who are going to have a real interesting rest of their school year did a great job.
It's a kind of behavior that, like, teenagers, athletes, adolescents do this kind of shit. Yeah. Just being realistic, yes, it happens. A lot of it happens. and, like, there is sort of this boys will be boys kind of way to look at it, to think, okay, everyone who is involved in it surely thought it was fine because I thought it was fine at the time or whatever, right?
That is how this all works, yeah.
And that's how this perpetuates. This is, I think, the rare instance in, like, sports history of that type of shit being exposed to the point at which, you know, we essentially all agree, like, oh, that's really fucked up. That's bad. We can't do that. And, like, honestly, it's been kind of interesting, like, to see a white guy lose his job and to be trained by the previous number of years to expect other white guys to rise to his defense, because that's what happens, right? And in this instance, there's like two reasons where that doesn't happen. One is he's a fucking loser. He won one game last year. Three of his last four seasons were bad. So, like, nobody capes for a loser. And the other is, this shit all sounds weird. Like, no one is going to leap to the defense of people humping people who don't want humped. Pat Fitzgerald's gone, and nobody's caping for him. And, like, the fact that there's a white guy who lost his job and nobody's starting a culture war about it is that feels unique.
We're weirdly reliant, I think, in no small degree upon, like, societal homophobia here too. Nobody wants to be seen standing up for the Ghibli bits possibly touching guy.
Yeah.
Which is a very weird ally corner to find yourself in.
Additionally, there was an article on July 10th published by Nicole Marcus, Alice Brown, and Cole Reynolds. Great job, y'all. Again, in the Daily Northwestern, about a hostile environment and, in their words, a racist environment in the football program where black players were uncomfortable, particularly with an emphasis on good, clean American fun, a phrase used to reference how they wanted players to look and act that did not include longer hairstyles for black athletes. White players were, of course, allowed to have those. Also, in addition to that, some raw bad, stupid, extremely insensitive racial jokes against Black and Latino players. Just bad vibes. Like in addition to being like just dumb, just like a dumb, stupid, condemnable way of doing things.
And without even lest we underemphasize this, without even a shitty business reason to show for it.
Yeah,
it didn't work, so to speak. You won nothing. You did and this like, for nothing.
The point has been made that, you know, there's no one saying Pat Fitzgerald said this, or Pat Fitzgerald was doing the creepy naked stuff or anything like that, or even necessarily knew about it. But the point has been made, and
we're back to the urban thing again.
He makes so much money to micromanage this program. He controls these players' hairstyles, their clothing, their entire schedules, mm-hmm. on and on and on and on. If he didn't know 10% of his roster was engaged in it, you know, it's not one or two players. It's the school itself said at least 11 players have come forward to talk about this stuff, and we know some of them felt very bad about it afterward. Yeah, he makes more than enough money to know, and that to me, whether he did or didn't know, he doesn't get to make that money anymore.
And we're back to the Urban Meyer thing again, when we find out that you can't hold these guys up as, all caps, leaders of men, and, you know, talk about how invested they are in every detail of their program, and then say, oh, but not that.
Right, yeah.
Like, you gotta pick one.
Yeah, and this feels
and
like one where everybody
a long time ago.
I think for various factors, this feels like the rare instance where everybody gets that. Like nobody's caping for Pat Fitzgerald, and great, that's
well,
great.
Almost nobody's caping.
I almost went out of my way to find a bad take on it, and I did find one, but
yeah. But you know he's got a lot of practice at that.
Yeah, you know anyone can say anything.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone can say the words just have to come out of your mouth. They don't have to make sense, and they don't have to go in any particular sensible order.
And I'll say, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I made the mistake of attempting to listen to a different college football podcast. I understand that means I attempted something that's not real. Right.
Not aware.
I stepped outside of the bounds of our reality. And I listened to one on which a host, Danny Cannell, said after being reminded that we're talking about at least 11 players who have said this was real, and we know some of them do not look back fondly on it. Cannell said that he doesn't believe that any of them actually considered it sexual assault. To be clear, Danny Cannell has been in more locker rooms than I have. But also to be clear, I have been just as much a teenage boy as him. I have been just as much an adolescent dude as him. I completely understand exactly the type of situation we're talking about, and don't let the fact I was a youth group kid fool you. I fucking know what I'm talking about. I'm here to tell you, not everyone who does those naked shenanigans, and I was raised on Jackass, I get it, sometimes it's completely innocent. Not everyone who does those naked shenanigans looks back on them fondly. Some people do not enjoy them at the time. Some people feel pressured into them at the time. And for anyone to say 100% of the people who were essentially forced into engaging that stuff feel great about it, you don't know that, right? And then Cannell said, he followed it up by saying, naked bear crawls, those happen in every locker room. Do you hear the problem there? Do you hear the problem? We're talking about 22-year-old men telling 18-year-old essentially children to show their buttholes and degrade themselves for what is essentially their job at a public institution, or even worse, a private institution, right? Do you hear what's fucked up about that? We're talking about hundreds of thousands of athletes over however many decades. You're saying 100% of them feel great about that years later after reflecting on it? So, yeah, that was the bad opinion I heard.
Yeah, and it's not really worth entertaining past that, because there's just things you don't have to say. You don't really have to say, hey, you know, hazing is bad. Yeah, it's bad. It's bad. We all know that.
Right.
And
almost all of us know that.
It's also...
I'm all right. Almost all of us except Pat Fitzgerald.
It's also entirely possible... we love our state school jokes. It's also entirely possible to go through a situation and have a grand old time and realize years later, holy shit, that was fucked up.
Right. Yeah.
Like, it's possible and fine to change your mind about how you feel about certain situations you found yourself in when you were younger. It mm-hmm. happens all the time. This is not new. None of this is new. Before we get too far away from the origins of this, can I say something else that's not new? Because it kind of figures into the landscape we find ourselves in right now. It's notable and laudable that this story came from a student paper. It's also the latest card thrown down in a pattern, and it's not a great pattern, of stories of this type coming from outside the sports world, or from outside, you know, from outside the immediate world of the access. Of the access journalist. I'm thinking about stories in the past few years that have been broken by The Guardian, that have been broken by Inside Higher Ed, that have been broken by other student papers, and just the landscape that we're working with here. Like, the state of this business isn't bad enough, but the landscape we're working with here that makes it absolutely impossible for the people who are closest to these programs on a professional level to be the ones telling these stories when they should be at the front lines of these things. Don't feel great about that either. And I'm extra grateful that these other institutions exist. But when you look for, when you look for these stories that are going to rip something open, you almost have to go in through the outside now. And it's an interesting thing to contemplate for those of us, all of us on this show, who grew up, you know, outside these gates, and having to look in from outside these gates, and don't know what it's like to have our entire livelihood depend on whether a coach is going to call on us at a press conference. But these institutions have kind of created a two-edged sword where, and I suppose that's something to be grateful for too, where they cannot. You know, the Northwestern football team, this maybe isn't true at every school, but the Northwestern football team cannot take down the Northwestern student paper. They cannot put the Northwestern student paper out of business, and that's not necessarily true of whatever Northwestern's equivalent of AL.com is.
Yeah.
And we should be grateful for that, and the institution should be scared of that.
There's also a...
No, God, now I'm announcing Northwestern AL.com. Oh, my God.
Hey, Coach! Just wondering what you thought of
the rabid Northwestern homers.
Yeah.
Hey, dude, I found a UNLV. I found a rabid UNLV fan.
I believe that. I believe that part.
Reno.
There's a wild thing here where Pat Fitzgerald is ironically taken down by student athletes stating their own experiences and exercising their own power.
Why is that interesting?
It's interesting because back in, I believe, 2014, Pat Fitzgerald urged his players
to... God, has it really been that long?
Yeah, to vote against Kane Coulter's attempted unionization of college athletes at Northwestern. And that kind of fixed him in our minds as, you know, Pat the Pinkerton, the strike breaker, the cop, which I don't think was...
Pinkerton is hiring, by the way. I went and looked.
Oh, well... I have a candidate.
Have to ride a horse, but
I got a job candidate. That's the easy ironic take. But the longer thing is this: that this is like, who does the football program belong to? And the longer someone stays there, I think the more a coach will believe that the program belongs to them, and the weaker the entire program will generally get, particularly if it's not. If it's not something the players own, like, say this for Miami, okay? The program only exists. The program only exists in any form because the players believe that program is theirs. When they graduate, many of them believe that program still belongs to them. It's not the product of, like, one charismatic leader. It's not the product of one dictatorial type. It's the product of a bunch of people sort of all coming together and working and curating and preserving this ethos that's passed from, you know, class to class to class to class. And this is not saying, by the way, that the ethos or the code that those players express or value is necessarily positive by default. It can be negative. You can have extremely negative student-led or community-owned brands, ways of doing things. But on the whole, you're going to be a lot stronger if all those players not just buy into it, but if it comes from them, That's the thing to me. Like, if you have players who are in a particular place, they're from that particular place, and they are make it of that place. Don't try to impose. I know that's what we all do. And like year one, year two, we write the same articles about, I'm going to change the culture, I'm going to impose things from top down. You have to work with what's there, and it has to be a community thing. Like, this goes for so many things. It has to belong to the people. And ultimately, if it doesn't, this is the kind of culture that festers. You get this kind of thing where ultimately it's ironic that somebody who would emphasize individual responsibility would in the end, when the crisis struck, attempt to dodge it by saying, I didn't know that was happening. That seems deeply unlikely to me.
I kind of disagree with you, because so much of how Northwestern, like, there's a letter that was written before, in the middle of this whole proceeding, where Northwestern's, quote, entire team, unsigned letter, so truly could not tell you who sent this, who it represents, whatever, but came out strongly in defense of their then head coach. A lot of the behavior, like, Pat Fitzgerald is the central figure in all of this, but a lot of the behavior that's taking place is taking place at the player level. There are some of the allegations, especially with the racially insensitive acts and policies that do impact them directly. But a lot of this is really about what the culture was doing, and I struggle to say that. I'm not sure that isn't a culture that was local, that was allowed to sort of like develop on its own. I guess I look at this from a different point of view, which is not very centered on Pat Fitzgerald, which is not very good audio for talking about the coach who just got fired, having been there for a very long time. So there is another article on the Daily Northwestern right now about Northwestern's baseball coach, Jim Foster, who has only been there for a year, but has had several HR reports submitted against him about engaging in bullying and abusive behavior, for making sexually inappropriate remarks to a female manager, and about how the athletic director at the school didn't respond to these complaints either directly or sufficiently, failed to monitor after they had been investigated, et cetera, et cetera. Current AD, at least as of now, at Northwestern, is a man named Derek Gragg. Does anybody know what Derek Gragg did before he was the AD at Northwestern?
Was he the associate AD at Northwestern?
No.
No?
He was the NCAA's senior vice president for inclusion, education, and community engagement.
Oh.
He had a job where you would think he would be aware of these kind... Like, this wasn't, oh, we just sort of, like, put our most favorite, you know, long-standing football boy here. Jim Phillips, who used to be the athletic director at Northwestern for a long time. Does anyone remember where he is now?
That's an athletic director name.
Does anybody remember where he went to 2 years ago? He's the commissioner of the ACC.
Yeah.
What? That Jim Phillips?
That Jim Phillips. And so, I guess there are a lot of things in these reports that are disturbing, give you pause, are sickening, etc. One of the most, I think, baffling things that I saw came in Pat Fitzgerald's statement, where he's announcing that he'll be retaining legal counsel to fight back against Northwestern. And I'm going to paraphrase it here. He describes that the 2-week suspension that he served was a mutually agreed upon sanction as a result of this third-party internal investigation that Northwestern had done. I don't know what kind of meaningful accountability you can have when the subject or one of the subjects of an internal investigation gets to agree to the terms of his own punishment, gets to set the terms of his own punishment, and then gets to turn this into almost a contract dispute, where he says, now, wait a second, we both agreed that 2 weeks of no pay during a recruiting dead period, and I can't take my boys to Kenosha. We all agreed that that's what would happen. Like, it suggests...
That was the wildest part to me, that taking them to Kenosha was the problem. It's just that wild night air in Kenosha.
It suggests a power imbalance and a lack of like actual responsibility from the people who are supposed to be in charge. That like feels like, how could it have gone any other way? When you everybody in this world should have somebody to whom they are accountable. And Northwestern did not have that for Pat Fitzgerald. They simply didn't.
This is also where I point again to the they wanted to sign, because there is no good reason otherwise for Pat Fitzgerald, who is many things but not stupid, to put out a statement that is so openly almost not cheerful, but blasé, blithe, maybe is the word I'm looking for, about this 2-week suspension, about like, hey fellas, this is what we agreed on. And why on earth would you put yourself in a position to make that seem like it was not at all arduous for you? Like anybody with a lick of sense, or anybody, I'm getting to the point here, who has ever had to face consequences in their life, meaningful consequences for their actions, would automatically, I think, go to fight against the lesser punishment. You have to act like you've already been punished. That's the point of the punishment. And he can't even be bothered to fake being sorry about the 2-week suspension, because he doesn't know how to do that subroutine. He's never had to do that before, because he's never had to face consequences of his actions before. So yeah, why would he know how to do that?
It's treated like a pass interference flag.
Mm.
Where it's sort of like, well, that's what you called, and therefore you can't throw me out. Like, that's not an ejectable offense. You said it was pass interference. Like, it's a different form of football brain. This is the penalty that you said applied right to this situation, and therefore give me my 15 yards and let's move on.
Now, speaking of football brains, you know what we're really running short on now? Guys who are shaped like that.
Mm-hmm.
Pat is one of a dying breed. We are really running low in like the executive CEO head coach era of guys who are shaped like armoires.
Also, shorts coaches. We're now down to just Mel Tucker.
I thought Biff.
Well, at least we know he'll be around for a while.
Biff Pogge at Charlotte.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Biff is now the ranking.
Biff has got to step up this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of weight on him.
I would. By the way, that baseball coach that was hired, who I guess
the story's even weirder, man. What is it with college baseball this year?
College baseball. Settle the fuck down, please. God damn. Didn't hear from you for a decade.
We already said we love you more than MLB. Don't
this
push
is
it.
Why LSU
major
won
media
the
institutions
World Series.
Hire
LSU. I would, wins one title, everyone loses their mind.
If I ran a major media operation, I would hire one college baseball writer, and I would ask them to never write about anything that happened on the field. Right. I would just have them investigate every head baseball coach, because the shit you would find based on this year alone would be Pulitzer Prize winning material and at least 3 Netflix series.
If you told me that two weeks ago that the gambling scandal that was centered around the street named after Pete Rose was going to be overshadowed very shortly, I'm not sure what I would have done.
Yeah. That guy, by the way, went 10-40. That's it. That's the bet. So it wasn't just like he sucked a little bit. He was the worst by far at his job by a margin of like twice as bad as the next best team.
Wow, that's almost as bad as Pat Fitzgerald's record last year.
Almost, buddy. He didn't even last year. They did not win a game in the United States.
Can I throw one more softball at the Danny Cannell dunk tank while we're at it?
Sure.
While we're all here. Stop, everyone. Stop, everyone. Pretending as though the way you have interacted with a powerful figure is emblematic of how they treat everyone. Like, you might as well be turning on, you are pulling the chain on a permanently installed neon sign above your head that says, I don't understand basic power structures and imbalances, and I vote.
This is a useful metric, I think, for everyone in almost all walks of life.
Yeah, it is. But he was nice to me. Golly fuck. I wonder why.
Like, Danny Cannell, Tim Brando, Darren Revelle, they're all relying on a dichotomy that frankly is not relevant to this discussion, which is, no. Is Pat Fitzgerald a good person or a bad person? I have bad news. This
it
is
doesn't
not
matter.
A useful label for most people because people are complicated and capable of making decisions in both directions.
Yeah, we're not like, talking about that. We're talking about, like, was this fireable or not, right?
Right,
like,
right, right. I think there is the whole cancel culture pushback movement is very much based on we're taking good men and it's because it's always men, and we're tearing them down. And in fact, it's like, if you simplify this to just actions or lack thereof, decisions mm-hmm. or lack thereof, mm-hmm. and you judge those, this is not terribly complicated. I will absolutely, if you have 10 good stories to tell me about Pat Fitzgerald, how he helped this former student manager who was in the hospital, how he was generous to this group, I can accept that those things are true, and that he failed in his job in these regards. I am capable, and I'm not that bright. I don't even have a job of understanding how people are capable. It's the same. It's not that divorced from people who think, well, I have a good kid, and therefore they can do no wrong. Good parents and thoughtful parents understand that that's not how children or grown-ups work. Everybody is capable of making bad choices, of doing the wrong thing. And the responsible thing to do is to look at those choices, which are backed up by evidence and testimony and investigation, and judge those, and not fall back on, well, I think he's a good person. I don't give a shit if you do. That's not what's at issue here.
Yeah, I don't give a shit if he is a good person. You know,
we have run into so many times over the past, Jesus Christ, going on a decade now of looking at what people are saying rather than what they're doing. Looking at what they're doing is so much faster and requires so little parsing. It's less effort. Do that.
I also like the flip
you're saving
side is
yourself
also,
energy in the long run, and you're going to get a more accurate reading on who you're dealing with.
The flip side is I also don't feel any strong desire to condemn Pat Fitzgerald as a bad person. I don't know.
No.
I don't.
Like, this is just like, you can't do that job anymore.
Right.
No.
Yeah,
right.
Like, honestly, I'm going to hold the union busting thing against him forever. This is an example of a person being entrenched in a powerful place too long and having no one to answer to, right?
Right.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
And that second part, Pat Fitzgerald's not the coach. And I know he's going to sue. And I know there's a decent chance he's going to get some money out of this. But he's not coming back to that locker room as head coach. The second part is what Northwestern has to fucking figure out. And it's not, look, we've said this before. God, we've been doing this a decade. And if I thought about going back and thinking about all the shit that's unfolded since then, and then I decided that was a bad way to spend my brain time. It is not, there's nothing special about Northwestern that's like, oh, look at this like one place that did it.
It's very hard for us to say as Medill grads, but you know.
The structure that allowed this is the root cause of the problem.
And the structure that allowed this is fucking everywhere.
Yes. Yes.
Like, not that's another, you know, there's two meanings to saying Northwestern isn't special. They are neither unique nor are they alone in this.
Yeah, right. Right.
Which, again, not better.
No. But there probably isn't a better here.
No.
No.
Like, and that's like, okay, too.
Well, I don't know if okay is in it. It's just what it is.
That's the better way to put it, yes.
If I think there is a good instinct somewhere in all of this stupidity, like if there's if there's a point somewhere under here, it's this. We're very, very bad at processing when bad things happen, particularly in terms of an understanding of it. Tell me something. What is a degree under forgiveness, tolerance, that people, because people aren't truly canceled. People get other jobs. right? Like, for instance,
Fitzgerald has generational wealth right now.
He does. But go look at the Texas A&M coaching staff. In this profession, people do not get canceled. Mm-mm. They don't. I can really only think of one dude who has been deemed so toxic that he cannot work again. And he actually has a job.
And people keep trying.
He's been hired. Three times?
Yeah. Three times. Coached in the Italian Bowl, actually.
I'm glad we didn't go to the Italian Bowl after all.
Yeah.
It's not just this. It's not just even coaching, though. Like, no one gets canceled, period. Correct. My mother-in-law is in Greenville, North Carolina right now, handling a case against who, and the attorney opposite her is John Edwards. He's still practicing law.
Now there's a guy.
Wow.
Yeah, he's really bad at it. He's really bad. This is like the third time. Say again.
Is he still handsome?
Not yet. Handsome is not the word. Is he still pretty?
That painting in the attic is a fucking mess, though. I'll tell you what.
Yeah. I've been told sweaty, shaky. I think he knows what he is, and he displays it on. He puts it on full display. He's a bad lawyer. I have been told that. Like, he is not good at his job.
Lawyers are less impressive in court than anyone who hasn't actually been to a court. Really knows. Like, if you go to an actual courtroom and watch someone argue, I'm sure he is a bad attorney. But on the whole, like, I bet if you went back in time and you're like, let's go watch Clarence Darrow, you'd be like, this dude's fucking clueless.
Sam Waters.
If you watch too much Columbo and then watch an actual lawyer, you're going to be disappointed.
like half of court is like, do we have that? Shit. It's so funny. I'm not lying. That's like, never told the joke. That is half of court is somewhere.
That's why
like,
lawyers need
that?
To get three timeouts, just like a coach.
Oh my God, Ryan, this is the next act for you. We're sending you back into the legal profession.
Oh, you gotta go back, just less
Miles, attorney at law, seeing another client.
That wouldn't pick him.
Another way to the chair. Ryan,
why not?
Go back and just change all your handles back to celebrity hot tub as if no one will remember.
Nothing happened. I was never here.
Can I,
Ryan Manti?
But like we're terrible at processing somebody as they do this job and they're an asshole who has done a bad thing and they're still going to get to do this job. Like, nobody's.
And we have not, over the past few years, gotten better at it despite a lot of reps.
Yeah. Like, that person's just still sitting there. They still exist. And they're still going to get a job.
I would be more okay with this if there was any sort of follow-up to it. Like, yes, you're right. The Pat Fitzgerald, he's, what, 48? He's still very young.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Pat Fitzgerald will probably end up coaching somewhere at some point. Maybe not as a head coach.
He's younger than Spencer.
Maybe
not. And
that
might be fine.
Is he?
But I guess the thing I would want to know is, like, okay, what does the follow-up look like for the school that inevitably hires Pat Fitzgerald? Let's accept that as a fait accompli.
It won't be Liberty because he's Catholic, but that's about all we can rule out.
Like, are we going to ask any follow-up questions? Are we going to say, okay, like, what will be different now?
Right.
What have we asked him to do differently? I thought about this a lot when Bo Pelini got hired at LSU after his stint at Youngstown State. Mm-hmm. Where one of the Steubenville rape defendants, he specifically sought out to bring onto the team. And Bo Pelini got hired at LSU around the same time that LSU is in the middle of this huge Title IX investigation, the one that also includes Les Miles and has like a number of issues related to how they're dealing with sexual harassment, accusations of sexual assault, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm just like, nobody asked any of these questions. Nobody was ever like, okay, well, like, what are the expectations of Bo Pelini? What are you doing to make sure that he will follow these guidelines? Just nobody, it's just like Bo Pelini's
because we don't
here,
live,
now he's
well,
not.
There's even an optimistic case for that because we don't live in it, but there's a universe that we live in. There's a universe out there where Bo Pelini where Pat Fitzgerald, where any of these guys are learning and making restitution and where they know what to look for next time.
Sure, sure.
But we don't live there.
And we do have, within the sports world, examples of attempted atonement. Everyone usually goes to Michael Vick, and I think that's a great example.
Tim Hardaway is another really good example, frankly.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Tim Hardaway has educated himself and spoke out against his own queerphobia, right? Like, there are examples within sports world of someone stepping in it, learning from it, and helping other people not step in it, right?
Yeah, and in our sport, we just don't seem to live there.
Yes, right. It's rare in college football.
Why? What makes it rare?
The quickest thing, the easiest answer I can think of is math. Because yeah. you have the biggest mathematical power imbalance and age difference between the labor force and the folks in charge.
Yeah. I think it's college sports. I think there's just too many people who are willing to hire, because it happens in college basketball as well, right? Like, possibly even worse scumbags get jobs in college basketball.
Dave Bliss got another job.
See, there again, yeah. I would call it.
Yeah. So, like, I think it's just
the
number
of. I would call
it
a math thing. There's even more of them.
Yeah,
than
that's the math
football.
Thing for me. It's the number of people who are willing to open their paychecks. Like, you can be frozen out of, you know, a pro league if 32 owners don't like you. For good or bad reasons, right? Right. Whereas in college sports, you're telling me 100 plus people, you're telling me Liberty's not going to take a chance on you, right? Like, it's just almost impossible to get frozen out of college sports just because there's so many people.
Which, and everyone appears to know that at this point. And I know why you're doing it, so this is rhetorical, but I'm like, why are y'all whining? You know you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine forever. You know you're never going to experience any actual consequences or fallout from your actions. So why are you whining? Shut the fuck up.
Can I
shut up?
Can I dispel a myth and then we play a game, perhaps?
Okay. I love games.
Yeah, they're great.
Both are related to Northwestern, unfortunately. First up, it has been said many times over the past few days, Northwestern has fired its best coach ever. I understand why people say this, all right?
Because he beat Scott
Frost.
He was
there a long time, and he won, you know, a number of games, and he finished ranked a few times. I'm going to go through some historical records, all right, about Northwestern's quote-unquote best coach ever, okay? Pappy Waldorf had 3 top 10 finishes in 12 years at Northwestern. Pat Fitzgerald had 1 in 17 years. Gary Barnett inherited a 3-win team and took it to a Rose Bowl. Fitzgerald inherited a 7-win team and never won better than a Citrus Bowl. Robert Voits won a Rose Bowl at Northwestern.
How?
Randy Walker never had a 1-win season, but Pat Fitzgerald did last year. List of Northwestern coaches who have won shares of conference titles. Randy Walker, Gary Barnett, Pappy Waldorf. Dick Hanley again. Here's a name. Glenn Thistlethwaite.
Shut the fuck up.
Wow.
And Walter McCornack. Wow. Pat Fitzgerald never achieved that mark. By SRS rating, Fitzgerald's best team ranked 20th among all of Northwestern's teams ever. His worst team was Northwestern's 19th worst team ever, which is saying a lot, because there's some garbage down there. And you might say,
ladies and gentlemen.
You might say I'm being unfair because, you know, Northwestern's the schedule got harder or whatever. No, that's bullshit. The Big Ten added Rutgers, Maryland, and late capitalism Nebraska. The schedule got easier. The math backs it up.
Gig economy Nebraska. Yep.
Yeah.
Can you imagine anything more terrifying than at 11
Nebraska,
p.m.
Nebraska, 1.7 stars is arriving.
Yeah, I was going to say,
Nebraska has arrived with your meal.
Yeah, you've ordered some late night Taco Bell, but you didn't
feel like
driving.
It's been sitting out for 7 hours.
So to the Nebraska listeners, I know you were like, oh my God, they've almost made a whole episode. They haven't said any shit about Nebraska.
I can't believe they're talking about the Big Ten West.
They're going to fucking do it. I'm sorry.
But there's the spectral eyes of Herbie the Husker at your door at 11 p.m.
So here, one more math fact. The hardest schedule Pat Fitzgerald ever faced was the 58th hardest schedule in Northwestern history. He faced 7 of the 20 easiest, and he lost to Southern Illinois. So don't give me any shit about it was too hard for Pat Fitzgerald. This is the easiest era in Northwestern history. Thank you.
So look at the way that guy is shaped. He's made to take blows.
The man was shaped like Minecraft. Get him out of my sight.
You lost to an artisanal sight hound.
Oh, shit.
Lost to Duke. He lost to Miami of Ohio. Like, brother.
Get it together.
All right. So game time. All right. You ready?
All right.
Northwestern is in a fucking pickle. because it is goddamn July, right?
Yeah.
Football stuff starts, well, weeks from now, like Big Ten Media Day.
Yeah, notebooks are on sale.
We're set 50 days, I think.
Yeah. Fall practice starts really, really soon.
Yeah.
And they've also committed to this logic of that, well, they can't just promote from within because, like, right, if the logic, which I think is sound, is that he can't coach the team because he should have known about this, well, guess who's even closer to the players? It is assistant coaches, right? Mm-hmm. So here is Bruce Feldman's list of potential Northwestern targets, right? Tell me, as we go, if you were this person, if you would make the jump to Northwestern in mid-July, right, to take over a one-win team. Mike Kafka, New York Giants offensive coordinator, former Northwestern quarterback.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And offensive coordinator that is really pretty well regarded right now, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. We had a lot of fun with his Heisman campaign.
As Bruce notes, he interviewed for like NFL head coaching jobs already.
Okay.
So he's not taking it. Right. So are you giving up a potential NFL head coaching job to spend 3 years rebuilding a program at which winning 7 games is an achievement, right?
No. Well, right. Hang on. Is there a little bit of Duke in play here? Like, I don't know Mike Kafka's life. I don't know what he wants out of life. But is there something to be said for win 7 games and you're a folk hero?
But that was the last guy. Like,
yeah.
Right.
Nope. You're right. Okay.
Yeah. Also, man, Kafka.
Sorry, I just wanted to make sure we tested all these boundaries systematically.
Also, yes, Mike Kafka, he did a year after he got out of the NFL, he did a year as a GA at Northwestern, and he's been in the NFL ever since. He was with the Chiefs for 5 years before he took the OC job. Like, I don't see why he would do this.
And from that perspective,
he's a Chicago guy.
Even if he did want to do it, what gives us an indication of being good at it, right?
Right.
Right. Yeah.
This would be a wild place to be like, this is my first head coaching job.
Right. Taking over this mess. All right. Second, Matt Campbell, Iowa State head coach. Are you giving up that rebuild to start all over?
This would be wild, but also, has he stayed too long? Is this the lifeboat? Is this the last helicopter out of Ames?
This helicopter smells a lot like leaky gasoline.
Uh-huh. Yeah. This lifeboat has a suspiciously large amount of water already in it.
Also, like, let me go from a really hard public school job to a really hard private school job. You know, like, it's shit's only going to get harder.
Yeah, I would. Part of me is also like, wouldn't you rather stay in like the slightly watered down Big 12 than jump
also,
to
yeah,
like
yeah,
the,
why are you trading?
Now you play USC.
Contextually, yeah,
instead of playing
right,
Cincinnati, you're going to play Ohio State. Brilliant.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
No thanks.
And for anyone, any newcomers, like this, Bruce Feldman knows what he's talking about. These are like the names Northwestern. Because
why would you leave? Why would you leave the water of Ames?
Let's put it
behind.
Out here. When you say when Bruce says, you know, sources close to Dana Holgerson, Bruce's source is Dana. So like this is there is not a better. I'm not making fun of him. I'm saying there's not a closer source to these guys because
according to Dana Holgerson's dentist, Dana Holgerson.
I'm just saying, we're talking to new people.
Legally, you have to sell me Novocaine.
Oh my God. We're talking to new people. And I'm just saying there are two or three guys in the business that you can say this about, you know, Bruce and Brett. And right. when they say sources, you don't have to worry about who those sources are. It's the guy.
Let's translate what these mean along the way.
Yes.
If you say Mike Kafka, then that is an intelligent and coordinated guess made about a guy who's from that school, who has talent, and is going to take that talent somewhere. Hmm. So this is a hypothetical and somewhat realistic, like, A to B connection.
When you say Houston Nutt, you mean Houston Nutt has called Bruce.
That's right. When All we right. say Matt Campbell, I suspect this is what that means. Hi, we had kind of a middling and slightly disappointed season relative to our...
But I'm still hot shit.
The sports media meeting where we all agreed Matt Campbell has to be on all hot seat.
That is true. Next up.
And we have the guy who's made Iowa State consistently good.
He has to be on all hiring lists. Penn State coming open.
We got
to
get this guy out of there.
Yeah. We have a man who's built a spacecraft out of a tricycle, a hang glider, and a gas mask. Let's put him on the hot seat.
He's getting the commander's job now.
He thinks he has a good job. We've got to get him out of there. All right. Next up. Dave Clawson at Wake Forest. Is he taking the jump to the same job from scratch?
That might be the one job where I'd be like, maybe the Northwestern job's easier. But then again,
right now, it's different.
Dave Clawson might have the right kind of like, and I say this not judge as a moral judgment, of football brain to be like, what's the football job here? You know, like I don't think he necessarily is going to look at, wow, this is a challenging and complex situation.
I mean, does it make? Does
he does help? Like he does like rebuilds? Maybe he thinks my work here is done. So
they don't have cookouts in Illinois. He's not.
Ooh. All right, struck from the list.
Wow, fuck off, Burger King.
It's a banana milkshake after every win at
is
cookout.
It?
Okay. Yeah.
That's his inside knowledge.
He looks great.
Yeah. Which fast food restaurants were we counting in Chicago?
Burger King.
It's just
Portillo's.
It was Felder counting Burger King.
That's right.
Yeah, Felder counted Burger King.
17 were like within 2 miles of his condo, I think, at the time.
So many surfboard chicken sandwiches.
Okay, these are Brett Bielema numbers. Unfortunately, Brett Bielema has a better job right now.
Yes, he does.
Bird has a better job in the division. Okay. God damn.
Right. So yeah, Clawson is my is where I'm at a maybe.
I'm striking him because of Serber's journalism.
Yeah.
I'm striking him because my man likes the country club.
If he eats at Portillo's after every win as Northwestern head coach, he'll be dead in a year.
He's already got that kind of Mark Richt effect where he looks like his whole body's been dipped in paraffin no matter the season.
But he'll wait.
That's how he gets his tan.
He'll eat at Portillo's once a week.
There's not a lot of bone structure to the man. I don't know if he can handle
it. If he swells at Portillo's, if he gets salt-related water retention, I don't think there's any elasticity to his skin because of that wax.
He'll tear.
I think he just shatters. Yeah.
I think it's a good point that he is a rebuilds guy. He's good at it, and this would up the difficulty.
He can wait for the NC State job to come open in a year.
It'll always be open eventually.
Just in perpetual rebuild. I love that you're like,
what else
NC
are they
State
doing?
Will always need Dave Clawson.
What else are they doing? Do you call this building?
NC State is rebuilding. They have, your body has none of the same cells from when you were born. Like, that's NC State. It's constantly.
NC State is the program of Theseus.
It takes a lot of work to constantly have the same record.
If Wolverine were trapped in a meat slicer, that would be insane.
If Wolverine sucked.
Dave Doran
it's
is...
like Wolverine with no depth perception.
Do you know
like astigmatism Wolverine?
We're talking the best decade in NC State's history is probably...
It's Philip Rivers.
Best
Rancher,
means a
off.
Lot of things.
Get him out of there. Like Dave Doran has. Dave
Chuck Abano is a legend. I'll fucking kill you.
We're not firing Dave Doran. We're just saying it'll be open at some point.
Dave Doran. We're sending him to Northwestern.
They're always good for the rebuild. You're like, you've been working on the house, Dave. Yeah, it looks like
okay,
shit.
All right, tell me here.
So let's send Dave Doran to Northwestern.
I'm gonna say four words, and you tell me this can't be true.
Oh, no.
Dave Doran, Vikings coach.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. Fine.
Yeah. All right.
There's unlike the Vikings, I know how good his team is based on its record. They look 7-6. They are 7-6. Perfect.
I think that's downright neighborly of him.
He's perfect for Kirk Cousins.
Sure.
Jesus Christ, by the way, that's so mean.
Like we were talking about coach dynamics. Just a quick side anecdote here. Yeah. A story that I heard about James Harrison when he was at the Steelers. He got the starting gig finally in like game four of his season after the Steelers had cut him three times. Bill Cowher had cut James Harrison three times, and he finally He got the starting job when Joey Porter, he got playing time when Joey Porter got thrown out of a game before the game even started.
It was a Browns game, or no, it was a Bengals game. He got thrown out of before the game started.
Yes, and he got thrown out of it, so James Harrison gets on the field. James Harrison's a monster. They can't get him off, but James Harrison was also playing special teams at the time, And they said,
first of all,
and they said,
no, go back, run that back again and give everybody a pause just to envision it.
Yes. James Harrison.
Some of you were too young for this.
James Harrison was running coverage on kickoffs.
Jesus Christ.
And on punts.
It's like you're loading. It's like you're delivering a refrigerator in San Francisco and you lose the dolly.
Yes. So James Harrison is now in on defense, and Bill Cowher goes to Dick LeBeau and the defensive staff and the linebackers coach and says, hey, we need to give him a break because he's playing a lot out there and that's a lot of snaps. We can take him off special teams now and you could put someone else in so he's at maximum freshness for defensive snaps. And both the linebackers coach and the defensive coordinator looked at Bill Cowher, NFL legend and noted autocrat Bill Cowher.
And NC State coach.
And NC State coach. And they told him, you tell him. And Bill Cowher said, I'm not going to do that. So he just played all of the snaps and no one said anything to him.
He's tight end now. That's fine. He's too kicking late. Extra points. Yeah.
He brought orange slices.
All right, sorry. Jason, please continue.
Next up on the list, and the point of this exercise is to demonstrate how screwed Northwestern is,
sure.
Right? Mike Elko, Duke head coach, would be a strong consideration.
Yeah.
Heck, he beat them last year, if I recall correctly. If you have the Duke job and you have put time into turning things around, are you starting over in the Big Ten?
The argument I can see here is if you're Mike Elko and you're like, holy shit, people bought this. And you're like, I think Duke also has a brutal schedule this year. Server will know this better than I will.
They open with Clemson at
home. That's a real mean thing to say about Server.
At home.
They get Notre Dame at Florida State.
Yeah, it's not good. And the other thing, too, is like, we're not sure that like Elko has worked. At all.
Sure.
Like, right. This is Cutcliffe's program that he has brought to this level.
Goddamn right.
Right? Yes. So, like,
so I think
so like for
could,
him, it's like, get the fuck, let's fucking go before they figure out that I'm not going to make this continue.
Or before I figure that out.
Yeah, yeah.
You
like,
know?
It's not going to work. I'm
like
telling
that,
you.
That is, I think, the one argument for, like,
I don't disagree there.
I don't see this as winning with Cutcliffe's players. He
Hey,
he inverted the record the last couple of years.
It was 3-9 to 9-4. I'm not seeing a lot of.
Well, no. I just mean like the fact that like for four of the final 5 years of David Cutcliffe's tenure, like Duke was in a bowl game, and that was a team that in 5 years would have maybe won four games for most of my life. Until
like I said, seven games, folk hero.
I think we're remembering Cutcliffe from like almost a decade ago.
About my dad.
I will say this. If I'm Mike Elko, I'm like, all right, who will give me double what I currently make? Northwestern or Duke? I'll go with whoever does that.
Snapping the pool cue.
Yes.
I love this idea. I would like to talk about something realistically. Heat check something for me here. Is it even possible to snag a current head coach from the P5 level at this point in July? Because would the fallout from the left behindedness of your former
Michigan
team,
State did it.
Right.
When they got Mel.
Holly stipulated P5.
There, that's it.
So speaking of that, next on Bruce's list is Willie Fritz, Tulane.
Oh, boy.
Are you leaving the Cotton Bowl champion favored to go back to the NY6 to start over at Ground Zero?
Any of you ever met Willie Fritz?
No, I have not.
Dead
eyes. He has these blank, black Steamboat Willie-looking eyes that I think would make him a really strong addition to the Big Ten coaching fraternity. It's just like staring into an animation cell. Not in a good way. They're terrifying.
Wins another New Year's. Say he goes to anywhere near the NY6 again, right? At that point, could he get a far better job than Northwestern?
I think so.
Yeah, that's the thing. He could do. I know he has the profile, but I want you to consider also the talent available within throwing distance of Tulane.
Also, Willie Fritz has significant Southern coaching experience. I really hate to say it like this, but we're truth telling on this program. He doesn't have to go to fucking Chicago to coach. He can get a better job where there are no seasons.
But isn't Willie Fritz the kind of, I'm not trying to just be contrarian here, isn't Willie Fritz the kind of coach who gets rumored? He's kind of where.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Every year, like, it's like, oh, maybe Willie Fritz. He never gets the final job. He's 63. Like,
he never gets his final job because he's terrifying in person.
But his window has to be closing, right?
Mm. I mean, why wouldn't you just go ahead and run this on out? Like,
Tulane
work. Congratulations.
At this point, he can go down as a Tulane legend, or he can mm-hmm. be, you know, the last memory of him is guy who got fired by Northwestern 4 years
yeah,
from now.
No, yeah,
do you want to go out
yeah.
fired and cold? I would rather go out fired and warm. That's my
there's no Frost Top root beer in Chicago. There's this my
yeah,
opinion.
Yeah. Also, by the way, little note about Willie Fritz. He played college football at Pittsburgh State, where their mascot is
the gorilla.
That's right.
That is correct.
That's right.
That is correct.
This next one, I think it demonstrates how low my opinion is of Northwestern's desirability right now, because I think even this one is a no in July. Chris Creighton, Eastern Michigan head coach. I think even Creighton would be wise to stay put with his rebuild, get a better job elsewhere.
Because you know what, you don't have to worry about at Eastern Michigan academic requirements. Those are
so
not.
there's that.
Here's an unpleasant way to view this. If you take this job and it doesn't go well, or it only goes like so-so, you have the story already built in for you. You get to say like, well, you know, I came in late. I'm sure a bunch of players are going to transfer. The athletic director, you know, you get to tell the story about like, you were not set up to succeed. And so if you are Chris Creighton, maybe this allows you to go make more money for a little bit of time, try to get a little bit more national attention, and then if after 2 years it's a fucking shit show, you can say, like, yeah, I'm just going to move on. Like, is there an element of this where, like, the bar is so low that if you are just trying to use this as a stepping stone, this is a useful stop in some ways?
Perhaps.
In a way that Eastern Michigan, like, would really have, like, to go back to Willie Fritz. Willie Fritz has been at Tulane, what, like 9 years or some shit?
A while.
It's taken him a long time to sort of get to that point. And I don't know, like, do you want to spend a decade grinding it out at Eastern Michigan? Or, like, it's not the same situation.
Do you know how long Chris Creighton's been at that gig? You're going to puke.
He's the winningest coach in EMU history, which isn't saying a whole lot. But
he
still
is an EMU legend for going 430. He is 46 and 61 there because he has been there since 2014.
Oh, he's been, yeah, it's even longer.
Never
mind.
Minute.
Yeah, if you've been there that long, fuck it. Yeah. I guess my larger point is just like, somebody might try to pull the Bill O'Brien here, where you come in, you get in 2 years, and then you're like, look at that. The Texans want me to be in charge of everything because the world is dumb.
I think, so on Bruce's list, the last two current coaches, no longer head coaches, offensive coordinators, Moore at Michigan and Reese at Alabama. Michigan, I'm like, man, that offense is kind of fucking loaded. Like, you know, after this year, I would say a pretty likely playoff run. You know, there's going to be head coaching jobs in the running, you know, at some point there. Tommy Reese, Northwestern head coach, I don't hate it. I really
Tommy
don't, because
Reese,
Saban,
Tommy.
You know, Saban can get sick of people pretty quickly.
Tommy Reese, 4th and 3. Tommy,
can you imagine what Alabama message boards will look like if in the middle of
Jesus.
As of now, I am not aware that Alabama has clearly identified QB1.
Right.
And the OC who just showed up like 4 months ago is like, I'm out. I'm going to take this mess of a job in Evanston. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
That's bad times all around. All right. Well, what are the other Big Ten jobs that might open this year to sort of like
spin
this out a little bit? Because to me, a lot of this is like, would
Iowa.
You
No, stop. We're not doing that. We are not doing that. No one, he is never leaving. He is gone when he is gone. I will believe it when the door hits him on the ass and is locked behind him.
Okay. UCLA.
UCLA? Maybe. Like, maybe.
Right, let's do it in rough order. Illinois is not opening. Indiana is
unless Bert leaves.
Yes, okay. Let's say opening because of a firing. Okay. Leaving, too hard to predict. So let's say Illinois is not firing Brett. Hmm. Indiana might fire Tom Allen.
Sure.
That's very much on the table. I don't think Iowa we're skipping. Maryland, I don't think, is firing Mike Locksley.
Why are we talking about Maryland?
I think it'd have to be a very... the same reason we're talking about UCLA.
Because of the Big Ten SEC rivalry.
Right.
I think we would classify any firing Mike Locksley at this point as just like a dumbass Maryland thing, right?
Or something very bad happens.
Yeah, like, so it's not the bad happens or they just
get smart. It would take a very big surprise.
Yeah.
On the Mike Locksley scale of something big and bad happening, right. Which is a lengthy unprecedented metric.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jim Harbaugh's not getting fired by Michigan. It's just not happening.
It's not happening.
I don't think Mel Tucker is getting fired this year.
They can't afford to.
Nope, they can't. Yeah. They can't. It's too much money.
I don't think PJ Fleck getting fired by Minnesota.
I think
a
meltdown
really
could really
bad year.
I mean, he's in meltdown
Fleck
prone.
PJ Fleck is quietly
and...
doing like better than fine over there. I think he's good for a minute.
He would have to win. They'd have to have like a 3-win season.
I think he's.
I'm not ruling it out ever, but
okay.
I don't think he should be fired. To be clear. Even
Nebraska's not firing Matt Rule. It's not going to happen. It'd be too funny for that to happen in first
no, look
year.
At him. It's like firing Teddy Ruxpin. No way.
I'm going to skip over one.
Wisconsin's off the board.
I'm going to skip over one and come over it. Penn State's not firing James Franklin.
Oh, come on.
They're not.
Are you sure?
We have this.
Settle
not
down.
This year. Not
he
this
might
year.
Leave, but no, no.
He might leave, but like, I don't think they're firing him.
Purdue's
not firing Ryan Walters. He's new.
Him.
Rutgers is not firing Greg Schiano. That's
he's
not happening.
Ever. Ever. I put him in the Ferentz category. If
okay,
just
Greg
like...
Schiano leaving for Northwestern would be the funniest possible thing
Jesus
we could pull
Christ.
Out of the conference, right?
All right, so that, and as Jason said, Wisconsin's not coming open. So I think there are two jobs that I'm like, maybe this job will come open. Indiana. And because it's who they are, Ohio State is the other job.
So Harbaugh can finish off Ryan Day and install his own assistant as Ohio State's head coach.
So I guess what I'm saying is nobody on this list should take the Northwestern job because at the end of the year,
you're
sort of
be
playing,
the Ohio State coach.
You can take the Indiana
at
job,
the end of
which
the
is
year,
basically
you'll
like
still get the Northwestern job.
Indiana is basically the Northwestern job with less mess at this point. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you can get the Ohio State job. Yeah. Dave Clawson, go get the Ohio State job.
I think for the show notes this week, I'm just going to list direct quotes that people have said during this episode.
Yeah.
And we're going to let everybody have a good time figuring out what they mean.
That seems
you
fair.
Know, by the way, just a note on Fleck. Maybe their best coach, like, ever? And
like,
I know, Murray Warren.
In a long time. In a long time.
Ever so, is not right.
In a long time.
But, all right, so listen.
No,
Murray,
it's
Murray
not.
War, Murray,
there is no,
the ghost of
no
Murray
ever.
War,
no, ever.
I only think
the ghost
is funny
of Murray War Math is always right there, okay?
Coaching peers.
Also, Murray War Math, the best college football coach name ever.
Murray War
ever.
Math.
Your name is literally the sport, Murray War Math.
All Murray.
But besides that, since 1950, if we take
okay,
that out.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Since
right.
1950, Murray Warmath, the legend, 18 seasons, a 526 winning percentage. Right now, after six, Fleck's hanging at 6-2. He's hanging at 620. He's 44
yeah.
and 27.
Fortunately for him, you've stricken Pudge Heffelfinger from the record.
I do. Yes, because
okay.
that person is not
wait,
real.
Wait, wait.
You could have given me five tries, and I would have just kept saying no, that's not real.
1895 Minnesota head coach.
But Fleck is... PJ
Fleck has done a good job. I'm not
Fleck
saying
is not
he
just,
got no. He got there and he shut the fuck up for the most part.
Yeah, Fleck
yeah,
has not
he's,
done.
He's done a good job. My point yeah. is he's volatile.
Yeah.
Not really.
I mean,
he's a volatile person.
Is he the coach that
not
I would
like? He has mellowed
his,
a lot.
His
is what
teams,
I'm saying.
His teams have been chaotic from week to week.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I realize
I thought
that's
you were
a thing
saying
in all
like,
of college
oh,
football.
The... I thought for a second you were going to say he's the guy who you might see having like a full Coney 2012 nude and traffic breakdown.
Oh, 100%.
Well, that, and, yes. And I'm like, maybe.
But that would be for recruiting purposes.
His teams have largely, from the grand scheme, been very solid. I'm not ruling out a year in which they are randomly horrible.
Hey, good job, whatever Minnesota staffer has kept PJ Fleck from having a TikTok account.
Yeah, seriously, whoever whoever did the like Mike Leach memorial phone swiping for PJ, congratulations. Because I don't know at this moment what PJ Fleck thinks about vaccines, and I'm so happy about
PJ Fleck's nude on Blue Sky, everybody.
Minnesota, they call it a blue ski.
That's what everyone who wants an invite. We don't have any. We're sharing them as quickly as we can. But that's what you're missing.
I think all right, we are a podcast business. Yeah. We are all on Blue Sky as of this moment, including Cerber.
I think so you look real there, nice, Peach.
Find us,
Peach.
You're so impetuous.
Peach. Hey, welcome to Peach's Beaches.